Welcome to WGMC at 50, a historical podcast series reflecting back on the five decades that WGMC Jazz 90.1 has been on the air in Rochester. WGMC 90.1 FM signed on for the very first time on November 1st, 1973.
We now commence with our first day of broadcast.
I'm Rob Linton, station manager of Jazz 90.1, and I've spent the past few months talking with WGMCers, past and present, and those who have had a hand in getting this radio station to where it is today, again, celebrating our 50th golden anniversary.
Welcome to the first broadcast by the Monroe Educational Radio Association Network.
We'd like to thank everybody who has participated in this series so far, and we invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy an oral history of WGMC. At 50. Well, welcome back to WGMC at 50. I'm Rob Linton, and today we have a very special guest, a gentleman who has quite a long history with Jazz 90.1. Has been, it goes back quite a ways. Eric Gruner joins us today. Eric, thank you for taking the time to hang with us.
Very glad to be here.
So you have, you were with 90.1 for many, many years. If you could take us back all the way to the beginning to when you came here, if you can remember, and all the things that you did over the course of your career here.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah, let me think back that far. I started off on a weekend show that was not jazz. It was called Progressive Alternatives, and we played like new wave music of the 80s, and I think that would have been 83 84, somewhere back in there, 1983. And kind of grew out of there. I did that for about a year or so, and then they were looking for somebody to do the morning show, and that was kind of a mix of, I don't know if you remember, WVOR-ish music, Fields and Crofts, and light, kind of easy rock, and we'd throw some jazz in there, just kind of off the cuff, it was included. And I was always a jazz guy. I mean, I remember Spyro Gyra when I was growing up and listening to and having all their records, and Chuck Mangione. I remember my parents taking me to see Chuck Mangione when I was like 10 years old, and I just remember getting the response from listeners when you'd play a jazz piece. And it seemed like there was always this interest in it. Anyway, so I stayed on as the morning guy for a while, and then I became the midday guy, and I became the program director when the guy choosing the music left. He went to work for WBER, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, Rochester needs a jazz radio station. It's a jazz town. So many stories that people would share with me about, you know, Eastman School of Music when Chuck Mangione was there, and just seeing all the great jazz players and the Pithod Club and all this great jazz that was here. And I thought, this could be a jazz station. So I kind of took it upon myself to pull all of the easy music out and get rid of all the light rock stuff and focus specifically on jazz. I'm sorry, Rob, can we stop here?
Sure, we'll pause.
Walked in, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
So one of the things I did when I became program director is look at the library and look at what this radio station had to offer the Rochester area, and thought, Rochester needs a jazz station, something that focuses specifically on jazz. So I removed all of the easy rock from our list, pulled it out of the library, did not become a very popular guy with some of the volunteer DJs who were only there to, you know, play their favorite music, but became the popular guy with everybody who was into jazz and thought that that was the way to go. And we became a full-time jazz radio station. Historically, I probably should have paid more attention to the date that that happened. it was just...
Well, what date did that happen, for those people who don't know?
That's a good question. Like I say, historically, I probably should have paid more attention to it. I didn't realize at the time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I see what you're saying. You don't remember the date. I apologize. Yes.
Again, I could go back and do the research. But it was a while ago.
Well, so what's interesting is this radio station, the fact that we play jazz. I mean, there was nothing else really happening in Rochester at the time, with the exception of a few jazz programs here and there. And then you make the decision to go full time jazz. But the station was relatively weak in signal back then. So you took a look at that. How did you get the how'd you let people know that it was changing, that Rochester now had this 24/7 jazz station?
Well, we did a lot of promotions. We actually kind of, at the time, I was working in commercial radio as well, part-time. I was working at CMF, I worked at PXY, I worked at Classic Oldies Station. Mm-hmm. I kind of took the attitude of marketing a radio station is done this way. Mm-hmm. So we had t-shirts and we had bumper stickers and we just got out to the community. And for a number of years, it was pretty light. You know, there wasn't a lot outside of our small group of listeners, a lot of people listening. But there were opportunities for the radio station. We got into reporting to Radio and Records, which was a big industry journal paper. We got recording to Billboard magazine, got recording to the Gavin Report, all of these industry newspapers, and they were doing jazz stuff. Mm-hmm. And we were reporting to them, kind of got us on the map. People started looking at this full-time radio station in Rochester, New York, that was playing jazz full-time.
Now, what was interesting is kind of, and we might be jumping all over the timeline a little bit, but after you switched obviously to jazz and some time went by, you realized that there was a need to obviously expand the reach of the station, so you're not just the west side and some of downtown, you wanted to reach the east side as well. And you started the project early on of looking into getting a translator as well. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I did look at coverage. This is part of the being a radio nerd, I guess, a radio geek. I looked at coverage for the radio station, and I saw that from the 90.1 signal that we were at 2,050 watts, mm-hmm, wasn't really covering the city. Right. We were sending a lot of our signal out onto the lake and to west, but to the city of Rochester, once you got over the top of Ridge Road, due to the height of the antenna and the power of the transmitter, we weren't really getting into the city very well, or even to the east side suburbs. Mm-hmm. So a couple of things that I did, I looked at that translator, and I looked at a bigger tower and a bigger transmitter. But the first thing we kind of did was we got onto the internet. Mm-hmm. We were one of the first, if not the first, radio station in Rochester that was broadcasting our signal online. Mm-hmm. And this would have been in the early 90s. Again, if I had really paid attention at the time and wrote all these things down, I could give you more accurate dates on it. But I'm sure there's a historian out there that will have all of this data.
Right. And you talk about the internet early on, and that was a significant feat for a radio station in general to do, but also a station of our size here. And it's funny, as we've been going through the historical files that we have here, there are some early emails that you received here at the radio station of people that picked up the station from all over the world that you had asked to report in and say, hey, are you listening? And people wrote in and said, we got you loud and clear from wherever. It's really neat.
Yeah, there was a guy who listened to us regularly in Tonga, and we had a member that supported the radio station on the island of Tonga.
Wow.
And the guy, Don Race was the guy's name, and I can't remember the name of his company that he sponsored and did this broadcasting on the internet for us. But he was just so overwhelmed that somebody was listening in Tonga. And he always said, I'm going to, when I have some spare time, I'm going to get on a plane and I'm going to go to Tonga and meet this guy. I don't know if he ever did. But
right.
Don, if you're out there, I'd love to know whether or not you made it to Tonga.
Now, at some point or another, the position of station manager kind of comes about, right? So you're a program director for a time, and I think the official title was what, operations director, and then you become GM. You're overseeing the whole place. And one of the things that's interesting is you take a look back at the fact that you didn't really have a staff. It was you and Cheryl Monk for a time that you guys were working together. But you take, you know, anybody listening knows that the station is listener supported, doesn't get any money from the school district, that kind of thing. Take a look back then, and you want to talk about the lean years. How did you do it with such a small budget and relatively small amount of money that was coming in from the listeners that we had?
I worked about five other jobs.
That sounds about right. Yep.
You know, it to me at the time, you know, I was in my early 20s. I was not necessarily looking at it from a standpoint of building a radio station, but building my career. And I thought that these are things that I need to do, and not only for myself, but for the radio station. And you mentioned a little earlier about the translator.
Right.
I did all the paperwork. I did all the applications. I did everything, just learning about how to do this, and submitted this application to the FCC for a translator, which basically retranslated our broadcast signal on a different frequency. And we got a tower, and the broadcast tower was out back behind Eastview Mall. So it was way over on the east side. And it wasn't very powerful, but it got our signal broadcast into the east side and the suburbs out there and Victor and that. And then I started working on a new transmitter and a new tower and getting our signal here, you know, right at Greece up to a decent size and getting a directional antenna. And it was all something, again, being a radio geek at the time, I was just so caught up in that. And I think may have bit off more than we could have chewed as a radio station in funding it. Unfortunately, I got a job working at a radio station as the program director up in Toronto, mm-hmm. at a jazz radio station there before that higher power and antenna came into existence. Yeah. And you know, I think the funding was a big roadblock. I think I may have had that transmitter tower approval maybe 3 years while we were trying to find funding to make it happen.
Yeah.
I'm glad it happened without me. I was disappointed that I wasn't there for the flip of the switch to go to the higher power. But, you know, at that time, I really wasn't part of the radio station anymore.
Well, what's very interesting, and a lot of people may not know or remember, or maybe they weren't listeners back then, was that this was a multi-year project. It was there was a name for it. I forget the name of the capital project, but it literally took tens of thousands of dollars and came down to the 11th hour of when the permit for everything to happen happened.
Yeah.
And it almost didn't happen. And that was after your time with the radio station. So you really got the ball rolling on that and to try to get us up to the 15,000 watts that we're at now. So, you know, looking back, kind of over time at the station from when you started to when you departed, what has it been like for you to see so much of your work that you did that's responsible for this place still being around as we hit 50 years?
Oh, well, I'm just glad that it's happening. I guess, I mean, at the time I was there, I felt, you know, totally responsible for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as you move on in life and in different careers or different job opportunities, it becomes somebody else's responsibility. I'm just glad that it didn't fail.
Yeah.
And a lot of props to everybody who's making it happen right now, including yourself, because I know the work it takes behind the scenes to make it happen. It's not just, you know, come on in and play some music. There's a lot more to it. And I'm glad it's happening still. I mean, Rochester needs this station, needs to have the jazz being heard. And, you know,
When you were here back then, did you believe that we would make it to 50?
That's a good question. Back then, you know, I never thought about that, to tell you the honest truth.
Yeah.
There was a point in time when I was up in Toronto, before you were involved, Rob, where I was worried that the station may not continue. But there's, not much I could have done about it.
right. I mean, the reason why I ask is because, you know, you and I, there's only a couple of us that have been in this position here. And I'll be completely honest with you. You know, when I first got here back in the early and mid 2000s with the financial woes that we had, I wondered if we would be able to afford to get to 50. And it's a pretty big milestone.
Yeah.
Do you miss it?
Oh, yeah, I do. I miss it. I've moved on in my career of doing video production, which I at this point right now I would say I like it better than being in radio. I don't know. You know, I don't look back on life and think I wish I was doing that.
Right.
It was great. It was so much fun. I mean, I think of all the stuff that we did as a radio station with like the Meet the Artist concerts and the people I got to meet, like the musicians I got to meet through the radio station. It was just, it was a dream job. It was so much fun. And so many people I met who were listeners and supporters and members of the station. And man, you know, I remember, here's a story of one of the things I remember the most. We had a Meet the Artist concert, and one of the parents brought their kid, and he was dancing down in front, and they were like, is it okay? I'm like, hey, you know, here's this kid, he's probably 8 years old, 9 years old, and he's down there, I'm like, let him go, let him do his thing, and let's make a jazz guy out of him. He's now the leader of the Glenn Miller Orchestra.
Wow.
And let me double check my facts on that, because
do you remember his name?
You'll have to edit this out, Rob.
Do you remember his name?
Here's where I'm
Eric Stabna.
It's Stabna. Yes,
yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
So well, his dad and I became close friends, because his dad had the radio station on in his chiropractic office. Yep. And he's like, you know, people always comment how great the music is and how, you know, relaxing it is to have this stuff on. And anyways, there's a great story behind Eric Stabna and his relationship with the radio station. I would imagine he's probably still involved, or
I believe he is. And his brother Carl, I don't know if you knew this or not, now runs the Theater at Innovation Square, which is in the old Xerox Tower. And they're both what wonderful family, wonderful. Yeah. And they still come to our events. We partnered with them for bringing Doc Severance into town and bringing Glenn Miller Orchestra to town as well. So. They're pretty incredible people. One of the things about the Meet the Artist concerts, I don't know if you knew this or not, but during the start of the pandemic, we unearthed a lot of those performances that were on old DAT tapes, and we dubbed them over and we rebroadcast them during the start of the pandemic when nobody was allowed in the facility.
Oh, wow.
And to listen to those concerts, and they're just incredible. You know, and some of the musicians obviously have gone on to bigger, huger things in their career. And then there's others that are still mom and pop groups here in town. You know, you've got the Bob Snyders of the world, and you've got, you know, people. It was just really neat to see and to hear.
You know, an interesting thing about those, I was the audio engineer on those. Some of them were on cassette tapes. I don't know if the cassette tapes exist anymore, but we had built up such a great relationship with a number of musicians locally, you know, Bob Snyder, Rich Thompson, Mike Melito. Those names come to mind right off the bat. But what I would do is I would get in touch with a musician, usually when they had a new record out or a CD out, and they were touring to support it. And I would say, look, I've got these great musicians here in Rochester that can be your backup group, right? You come in with a trio, I'll get you a bass player and a drummer. And, you know, you come in and do a concert, and we would sell their CD, and just, it was always such a great experience. And a lot of, you know, long time relationships. Mm-hmm. We had the Joyce D. Camillo trio. She would bring in her own trio and just sell out these concerts for us. And Mark Elf, he was a guitarist.
Yes.
But our very first one, I don't know if you can find the cassette tape. It was Willie and Lobo, and they were a flamenco guitar group. And we had it in a living room atmosphere, just a big open space there at the school building we were in.
Up by the old the room of the fireplace.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, if you dig back through all those photos, somewhere you'll find I've got my picture, because we always had a picture of me with the artists. There was always an opportunity to do that. And,
we've digitized all of those albums and all of those photos, and they're all on our website. So if you ever feel like going down memory lane, we have a devoted 50th anniversary page on our site with you in front of so many of these bands in that room with the fireplace.
Yeah. Which had to move to a bigger venue, which was kind of cool. They were taking that room and they were going to divide it up into smaller offices.
Right.
And got it kicked out.
Yep.
And then we moved over to the forum room in one of the high school buildings.
Nathaniel. It
perfect. It was... Yeah, everything just kind of flowed into place for that. And, it was so much fun.
Well, one of the final question I have for you is, again, as we've been going through over the past 6 to 12 months, all of the endless photos that we have, like literally hard copy photographs, you really had an opportunity to put together an amazing team of community volunteers here. Not necessarily jazz hosts. Many of them were, but maybe some office volunteers, maybe your, your folks that handled Meet the Artist. That had to have been a really great opportunity to have all of those folks, some of whom are not with us anymore, be so devoted to the radio station to give so much of their time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you have a lot of them mm-hmm. there. Some still, from back when I was there. So you've got some volunteers who have been there for 30 years, maybe?
Yeah, our longest running volunteer was Ray Serafin, who sadly passed away in the spring. He would have been, I think, our longest serving, because Polka Show came in, what, 81, I believe.
Yeah, they predated me even. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Eric, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. I feel like you and I need to have a cup of coffee because I love your stories. I love hearing your stories.
I got a lot of them that I could tell, but not on
a podcast. No, understood. Well, thank you very much, Eric. And thank you for everything you've done for this place. You're a fairly significant foundational block in why this station is here. And I personally feel that you do not get enough credit for everything that you did to keep this place going.
Well, thanks, Robin. You know, it's all ancient history. It's great to be acknowledged, but it's great to see that it's still going and that there's still listeners out there supporting the radio station. And I just can't say enough about how good it is to know that we still have a full-time jazz radio station on the air in Rochester, New York.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Eric. Thank you for checking out this episode as part of WGMC at 50, the podcast series celebrating 5 decades of Jazz 90.1 WGMC. Be sure to check back often as we plan to upload new episodes every week or two, celebrating those folks who have come through our doors, making this great radio station what it is today. Also, don't forget to check out our website. Our 50th anniversary page is loaded full of historical pictures, articles, audio, video, and so much more. This is Jazz 90.1 WGMC station manager Rob Linton. Thank you again so much for tuning in.